City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. City Talk 105.9. Bloke Talk with Duncan Barks.
This is a man's world. But it would be nothing.
It is Bloke Talk and it's City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. Thank you very much for tuning in, if it's the weekend or even downloading it, if you're listening to this on a podcast or a MP3 recording, whatever you technical people do. We're here for the best part of 60 minutes now. I'm here as normal as I was last week. Laura's here as well.
Good evening.
Toby, we know, is on the second week of his trip to, he's in Vegas, isn't he? As promised, but a week later, we've got a couple of special guests on the show. Yeah. How would you describe these gentlemen, Laura? What would be your kind of your thumbnail sketch? Go on.
Stars of stage and screen.
Yeah, you happy with that? Stars of stage and screen. Are you happy with that, both of you?
I'll take anything.
Yeah. Oh, well, Duncan, I wasn't sure if you'd know who the celebrity guests were tonight because both of them have starred in Hollyoaks, which I doubt you watched.
I've seen Hollyoaks, but I've not seen it for about 6 years. 6 years.
That's pathetic.
Yeah, you know, it's because you know I'm coming back on a train from work or you know putting children to bed. That's
I know,
why.
But there's always repeats on E4, and then there's Sunday mornings omnibus.
But
excuse to miss it, really.
But one of these gentlemen has been in it since God was a boy. Even I remember him in it. Oh, that's a fair comment to me. It's not a rude comment.
Absolutely fair. Yeah.
Well, listen. Let's get the formalities out of the way. So Laura's here. I'm here. We have. Do you know what? Do you know what Wikipedia is, Jimmy?
Duncan's just told me what Wikipedia. I've heard of it, but. I'm not a computer person. I'm really kind of a way back in the
Middle
Ages.
Your Wikipedia entry calls you James Jimmy McKenna.
Yeah.
Born 1953. Is that true? Is that a showbiz?
Can we just stop here? If you're going to take the piss out of me here, I'm going to walk out.
I'm taking the pee out of Wikipedia.
No, you're right.
And you've been in Hollyoaks since 1996. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. As Jack Osborne, of course, the landlord of the dog.
Yes.
And also a touch of frost, it says here. Have I got that right? Because, you see, as a journalist, it's a bit lazy to use Wikipedia, but you know what? It's great. Everything's on there.
Yeah. Of course it is. Touch of frost for about, I think it's nearly 15 years now, touch of frost.
Really?
Yeah.
Does Duncan know that you are really, like, close pals with David James?
Oh, you shut up.
Yeah. His Marks and Spencer adverts are very good at the moment. Have you seen those?
No, I haven't, no.
Yeah, he does the old adverts, doesn't he?
Is it the voiceover?
Old David Jason, yeah.
And it does, I think it's David that does that great voiceover for Tesco when he's a basket, you know those ones that you push, what do you call them?
Trollies.
Trollies. Yeah. Are you really that old, Jimmy?
Yeah. The basket you push.
Yeah, they used to have wooden wheels back in your day.
When I was at school and I came home at lunchtime, my mum used to say to me, go over across to Mr. McVean's, the greengrocer's, and get a half pound of butter, and you went to this old-fashioned greengrocer's that was covered in lovely white tiles all around you, and it was Mr. and Mrs. McVean in Crown Street in Glasgow. And you'd go in, you could buy loose biscuits and a half pound of butter and a wee half pound of ham here. And that's what it was in those days, it was a greengrocer, and you didn't have any baskets and you didn't have any trolleys, and that's my kind of a background, guys. That's why I couldn't remember what you called that thing that you pushed, but David Jason
trolley.
In the Tesco advert. It's a trolley.
Oh, thank goodness we cleared that up.
And you didn't get that in Wikipedia.
No, we didn't. No. It's a sadly lacking Wikipedia. So Jimmy's here. We've also got the other voice, and we've not introduced her. We've got Matt Milburn, who is another star of stage and screen.
Well, that's nice of you to say. Yeah. A sort of ex-star to a certain extent, but... Yeah. Moved on, I like to call it.
Yeah. And you're on stage this Christmas as well.
Yeah, I used to play Joe in Hollyoaks years ago. Moved on, doing a bit of panto this year with Sherry Houston and Rick Vaughan.
Yeah.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yeah,
I've heard of him.
He's the orange one, isn't he?
Yeah, the stylish Rick Vaughan, we like to call him. we're doing Cinderella at Southport.
Is that the guy that was going to be Jennifer Aniston?
I really don't think so.
He probably claimed that, but I don't think so.
He probably chatted her up and she mooched her way.
Yeah, that was Vince fun, wasn't it? I was just trying to be clever. I thought you'd
be showing your film knowledge there.
So, you two gents are here for the best part of this hour here at Bloke Talk on City Talk 105.9. And Bloke Talk, we just kind of, well, it started off being three blokes. Then we decided to dump one of the blokes because they were rubbish and get Laura in because to offer a female perspective on all things bloke.
Best decision you ever made.
Yeah, I think Can I back that? Yeah. I'll back that as an outside.
And you know, sometimes we talk blokey stuff and other times we just talk, really, because people don't talk anymore, do they? I think it's good to talk.
And I just think for all of us to sit here, we were sat a wee for an hour before having a wee chat and talking about things, and we just got the ball rolling and got the kind of sweat glands going. It's nice to talk and talk about anything. And I think we agreed.
It's a bit of a forgotten pastime, seems to be, these days.
No, I think you're right. So we're going to talk about a load of stuff, but what I'm interested in is one of the things that we mentioned before we came into the studio is you guys all share a house in a kind of monkey-style-y kind of way.
I was wondering how you were going to...
There were two analogies. I could have done the monkey thing, or I could have done the Morecambe and Wise kind of way. What would you, I mean, I'm guessing that you don't wake up in bed next to each other and make toast in the morning by chucking grapefruits around.
Well, you could have done, for the older listeners, you could have done Cary Grant and, what was his pal name? Was the other cowboy guy? Anyway, I'm not going down that road. Yeah.
Trolleys.
Well, either one, we don't wake up in the same bed, can I just say?
Because you share a house with two other guys, who are the other blokes?
There's me, Jimmy, Nick Picard, who plays Tony in Hollyoaks, and his brother John,
who plays Dom in Hollyoaks.
Done.
I know. Well, I would do watch it.
A Hollyoaks fan. So how long have you been kind of like house sharing for?
Well, I've shared the house now with Nick since 1997. Blimey. So we're talking about 11 or 12 years here. And Matt's been living in the garage for the last 5 years.
Can I just say that you actually banged Nick's head in for about 4 years
Listen, the story is when I first came into Hollyoaks. You got a deal for a month, and I stayed in the hotel up in, is it Lord John Street, just above the Lime Street Station. And the only problem, it was a nice hotel, the only problem was you wanted to ring down in the morning when you're trying to get a lie in and say, what time does my room leave for Euston? That's all you got, was trains going out and announcements. And Nick says to me, hey, Jimmy, listen, when your month's up, do you want to move in with us? And it was Will Mellor and Jeremy Edwards and one or two other boys. But the only place they had for me, and this is true, the only place they had for me was...
I can't believe this, by the way.
Was the room, was the snooker room. We had a pool table, which we called the snooker room, but it was a pool table in this fantastic house in Highton, which was up a lane. It was about a 5 or 6-bedroom house. It was isolated from everywhere. And I lived under the pool table on a mattress, and I paid the boys £10 a night. So if I was there 3 nights, I paid £30. If I was there 2 nights, I paid £20. And it went towards
being as tight as you are, presumably they took every tenner.
They took every tenner. And then after a number of years, when the boys had left and we decided to get, maybe grow up, Nick bought a house and asked me if I fancied moving in with him. And he started charging me rent. And that's how it started. It started maybe back in 1996, 97. And then Matt moved in and John's been living with us over the years and blah, blah, blah. Nick's brother, John, who's in the show as well.
Okay, so am I right in thinking you're like the elder statesman in this house?
Yeah, I'm the elder statesman. I'm the elder statesman in Hollyoaks. And I think there's only about two actors older than me, then Frost as well, and that's, I'm really old.
What's Jimmy like to share a house with?
Really annoying, really. He's good. Yeah, I mean, it's like we've talked earlier before we sort of came on air. Yeah. We like to chat and we'll talk about anything. It's good to get a perspective, an older perspective on things. But on a serious note, it's nice because you've got different generations and obviously people. Jimmy's got experiences that he can share with us, and we've got things to share. But the nice thing is, he learns from us, and we'll sort of learn from him in the same breath. In all honesty, it's really quite a nice place to be.
Do you bestow your wisdom upon these young lads?
Do you know what I think? And without sounding stupid and pretentious on the radio here, I do enjoy sharing the lads at the house with the boys, and we've got the same passions. We love music, we love football.
Yeah.
We're very family orientated, and I think politically we have similar views.
our hidden passion for wildlife programmes.
Hidden passion for wildlife, yeah.
But also... Kate Humble, Bill Oddie.
more Ray Mears.
Oh, Ray Mears.
Yeah. It's like, lights are fire anyway. Yeah. Go on.
And, but also, I do. I've learnt... Do you know over the years what I've learnt a lot about working with younger actors? They've given me a musical taste that I didn't necessarily have before I met younger actors. And a viewpoint about many, many things that sometimes as you get older, it doesn't mean to say your views or your opinions and things are any less valid.
Yeah.
But it's nice to get a younger perspective, and maybe younger's the wrong adjective to use, but you get a different perspective.
Fresher, maybe.
Fresher. Yeah. And my daughter's 32, and she sometimes makes me stop and think about maybe things that I'm entrenched in, and that's a good thing in life.
Well, we'll talk about music in more detail because I've been talking about music for hours, and we'll also talk about politics as well because I know you're a very passionate political man.
Yeah.
Just who does the cooking in the house? Does anyone? Because I've done
house
chefs.
It's got to be Tony, hasn't it?
You say that. That's
a fantastic cook, and Matt does a good sandwich, but
what?
Hang on a minute, my repertoire stretches more from sandwich to chili. Chili's my signature dish, really. But no, in all honesty, it sounds a bit cliche, but Nick can really ask who cleans the toilets. Yeah,
that's the only thing I can think with four guys living together, no matter how old you are.
I'm not being funny.
It's toilets. The toilets
must be
are dirty.
I'll be straight with you.
No, it's not.
For everything that you may assume or like that goes coincides with like four lads living together, our house is spotless.
No, the skirting boards are dusty. The skirting boards are dusty, but the toilets are spotless.
Well, that's
I hate dirty toilets.
Why are they spotless, Matt?
Because, thank you, Duncan. See, you'll be quiet when Duncan says, won't you?
Yeah.
No, that's been the odd occasion when I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and all of a sudden I'll look up and there'll be someone in the ensuite with his hand down the toilet with no marigold on, cleaning away. All right there, Matt. How are you? Jimmy's got a particular thing about cleaning their toilets, which is nice because no one likes to do it. But yeah, that's the job that gets done and that's the job that he seems to take most relish in.
Do you go in bare-backed or do you stick the marigold
on? Bare-backed.
Yeah. Bare-backed. Yeah, all
no,
the time.
No, do you know what?
The dirtier, the better.
I just think every 2 weeks, if we live in a house together, certain standards, it can slip. And my daughter comes in.
If everyone could see the seriousness across his face right now.
Yeah. And we have next daughter comes up as well. And I just think if you've... And next mum and maybe my... And my sister or daughter comes from Italy, and I just think...
You don't make us have to be like a load of Neanderthals.
No, they're not Neanderthals.
You wouldn't get left.
But if the girls are coming or we've got visitors coming, we don't want them to get into a dirty car. Yeah. That's just how I feel.
That's very refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the other guy that's normally in your spot, he had a dirty toilet. The first time I ever went round to it, we spoke about this on the show. Yeah. First time I ever went around to his house, there was a stain in the toilet.
Yeah, it wasn't pleasant.
And that just put a black mark against his name forever.
Bad use of words there, but I think we got the general thrust.
But yeah, a clean toilet is the most important thing. I'm very impressed with that.
And I'm
You're welcome anytime, Lord.
Yeah. No, I think you know, a clean Kazi is it's only right. And I think these things matter. The older you get, you kind of, you know, there's certain things you want, don't you? You want to make sure it's all right.
Even as a young kid, if you want to get into politics here,
you clean
I lived in a tenement block in Glasgow.
Yeah.
If I could just indulge myself here, Duncan. And there was three landings, and in each landing, what we called, there was three families. Mm-hmm. There was the side door, the middle door, and the other side door. Yeah. And in my landing on 116 Crown Street, we had three Irish Glaswegian families with lots of kids. So there was about, and I'm not, I think, without exaggeration here, there was 9 of us, 15. There was 18 people lived in this landing.
What?
And we had one outside toilet between 18 people.
Mm.
And I'm not being a working class hero here, I'm not. It was a fantastic, happy place to be. But these 18 people shared this one outside loo. And I remember my dad breaking broken bottles up and sticking them down the holes in that loo and pouring Dettol down because there was wee rats that used to come up from the Clyde and sniff when you were in there having the wee-wee, whatever you were doing. But I have to say, maybe this is what gave me this thing about it. It was never, never less than clean when you entered that toilet because the families that lived together and shared that loo together respected what they were going outside to do every night and during the day and kept it spotlessly clean.
Mm.
And my mum used to always say, when you leave the toilet, leave it clean. And we didn't have toilet paper in those days. There was the weekly news that used to drip up and they used to put it through a wee nail and tie it in string and hang it in the door. And you wiped your bottom with newspaper. I'm sorry to say, but...
Yeah. Real uncomfortable days.
And all I'm saying is, when you walked in here into that toilet that all those people shared with all those children and mums and dads and families that came to visit, lots of aunts and uncles, it was never less than spotless.
Who does That's the cleaning amazing. In your house then? Is that you as well, Jimmy? Or is
yeah,
that, or,
yeah.
Do you have a rota?
No.
You just get out and
don't
do it.
Don't you take credit for it all, because I get,
Matt,
I get slated on the
nothing,
quite.
I've been waiting to air this
for a while.
Matt just eats.
I'm a professional eater. It's part of my training.
Nick keeps it nice. John keeps it nice. I keep it half.
This is an ongoing saga that's been boiling up. And it's
Are you the youngest in the house?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, this is what it's all about.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's
alpha male type thing that's in a bit of a weird way. I muck in as much as anybody. It's just unseen. No, because I do it behind the scenes when no one's around.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you wonder why it's... I'm not going to get into a household debate.
You don't have to justify it.
No, do I?
Listen, what we'll do is we'll come back in a few moments' time, because I definitely want to talk about music, because I know, Jimmy, you're a passionate music fan, and Matt, I know you're into music because you talk about it in the house, so we'll also talk about politics as well. I've got to tell people, it's Bloke Talk, and you're listening to it on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
Bloke Talk with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
I'm Duncan. Laura's here, as you would expect, and our guests this week, we have Matt and we have Jimmy with the Hollyoaks connection. You just went out to the loo during the break there. Did it meet your standards all right? And out of 10, what are the City Talk loos like? Or could they be very careful, because some of the cleaners here are quite fierce. But
I'll give them a mini 7.
Because there's a brush alongside them.
No, there wasn't a brush.
Marigold inspection?
And I washed my hands.
Well done.
Listen, before we talk about music, and I think we should talk about music, I mean, again, I've become obsessed with Wikipedia. Your character, Jack Osborne, is, he gets about a bit, doesn't he, the ladies?
Yeah.
He puts it about a bit of the ladies, doesn't he?
I don't know how.
Yeah, and do you know what?
Is that just a fictional thing, or is it straying into Jimmy's real life?
No, that is, and Big Matt's known me, and all the guys that have known me for many, many years, that is a purely fictional thing.
Yeah.
And I say that in all honesty, it's a purely fictional. And if it happened in real life, I don't know what I would do. I'd probably run for Billy O.
And what's the, because, you know, I've been reading this, and Laura's updated me because she watches Hollyoaks a lot. You've kind of, you're in the clink at the moment, aren't you? Or are you coming out of the clink?
I'm in the clink.
What have you done?
I'm in the clink. Oh, I've done terrible things. It's not really me that's done it. It's Ashley Taylor Dawson, who plays my son Darren.
It was his fault. It's Darren's fault.
It's Darren's fault.
You're carrying the can, aren't you?
And because I love him so much, I'm kind of carrying the can for him a little bit. And he got me in it. He dragged me down, man.
Yeah.
Basically, what happened was.
Brilliant.
Can I tell you?
I can't remember.
I'm excited here. I can get to talk about Hollyoaks. That never normally happens. Basically, what happened was. Jack owns the pub, and Darren gambled it away or something. They got into massive, into massive debts, basically, and it all got on top of poor old Jack Osborne, and nearly had a breakdown, and he had a heart attack, and everything. I think.
Is that what really
did? Yeah.
And then
I've had 2 heart attacks. It's been awful.
How are you feeling?
Do you know what's happened? Laura, sorry, carry on.
And then, it ended up with him faking his own death, and they got into a bit of a.
Oh, like the canoe man.
Laura, that's scary.
Canoe man. And do you know what? Do you know we were before the canoe man. We just got in time.
Well, I thought that you copied that storyline.
No, no way.
Canoe man, Matt, was a guy who went out to sea in his canoe.
I'm with you. Sorry. Oh, we're talking about real life there for a second.
Hid in the loft or something.
Yeah, my current affairs are right up there.
Someplace, didn't
and then popped up to the light his wife every now and then and had their picture taken
hiding in the very next door for ages?
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Jack said it really hard recently. In the last year, he said the pub... repossessed. He said the gangsters moving in for the money that they wanted, the loan sharks. He said his wee grandson, Freddie, who's not been well. He said, oh, it's just been awful.
It's amazing we never talk about any of that.
Do you know in the house? Do you not discuss it?
We never have.
Do you know Duncan in the house, which is fantastic? We all love football and we love acting. We love actors.
Yeah,
and we love movies. We're passionate. We'll sit at nights and we'll sit in days and maybe watch 4 or 5 movies. We'll sit and watch 12 episodes in a day. And I mean this of The Sopranos, or West Wing, and get right into it.
But we never,
talk about individually what we are. What
West
we do.
Wing's genius.
Oh, West Wing, don't get us started on that.
You're a West Wing fan, Laura.
Nick Pickard's big. It's Nick that got us in the West Wing.
Nick Pickard turns into an ogre and just like buries himself in his room with like every series of the West Wing, and he'll watch them back to back for days
and watch them again.
So beautifully shot.
And again, it's so prophetic about, and maybe just bless and say, hallelujah, Barack Obama.
Yeah.
I celebrate that. Yeah.
No, we'll talk about politics in a sec. Yeah. We had, on my weekday show, we had Julie Peasgood on.
Yeah, Julie was one of my exes in
Hollyoaks. She's a game girl, isn't she? She was on talking about sex. Yeah, she's written these books about sex.
Yeah, no, apparently Julie does radio chat-ins about sex therapy.
She's written books about it. It was the greatest sex tips of all time.
Is she the one that was talking about hairy men last
week? Yeah, we had her on Bloke Talk, didn't we? We replayed the interview because we were talking about whether or not hairy men turn on or turn off.
Right.
Julie's not a fan of hairy men.
Well, I'm a bit of both.
It's the back thing.
She's my girlfriend in Hollywood for a year. And she never, ever thought of any of those things, I can tell you.
That's right.
Did you ask?
No, I was too embarrassed.
You mentioned your back hair on many times to her, didn't you? I heard.
No, she has all joking aside, she's a lovely girl, Julie. But I didn't know she was into sex talk.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's like that.
Well, if you'd have known that when you were there, then you'd have approached her in a whole different light. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
So in your Hollyoaks house that you all live in, when you talk about football, when you talk about politics... What?
The Hollyoaks house.
Talk about music. Well, all right, you mentioned that, you know, you sit there and you watch 12 episodes of The Sopranos and stuff. You're all into your music. What was kind of like... I mean, you're a big Sinatra fan. You told me this earlier before we sat in here and we were having a glass and some meatballs. You like your Sinatra. What else do you get off on musically?
Nothing.
Sinatra's just 100% Sinatra.
It's really weird.
What I get off on, I love Tam. I was brought up in Tamla Motown and Marvin Gaye and Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin. But I realised a few years ago, the first sound in my ear, that that hit me when I was a kid, that just went into my ear and went, wow, was the sound of Frank Sinatra singing. I don't know what the song was, I don't know how old I was, but I remember just being blasted away by the sound of that man's voice. Yeah. And I realise now the most beautiful sound to me that I've ever heard in my life is the sound of Frank Sinatra's voice singing.
Yeah.
And when I hear that man, wherever I am, whether I'm on the train or I'm sitting in a radio or I'm in a railway station or I'm sitting listening to it myself, the boys will tell you.
Yeah, don't start crying.
No,
because you could well start crying. No,
nothing, and somehow it touches me in a way that nothing in my life has ever touched me.
So what's the what's the Sinatra track that does it for you? And I'll tell you what, I'll put my hands up because I'm a Sinatra fan, not a massive fan, but I like my Sinatra. A couple of CDs I like, and I think it's on the Only the Lonely album, which is on the Capitol label. It's quarter to three.
It's quarter to three.
For my baby.
That's Nick's favourite Sinatra song.
I like Sam of Joe. Is it Sam? What's
that one? Yeah.
That's the one.
It's a rag.
Two stories I'll just very, very quickly tell you, but which epitomise Sinatra for me. If you asked me, if I had more than one child and you asked me who my favourite child was, I couldn't tell you. So I couldn't begin to tell you what my favourite Sinatra song is.
I know. Serious. Scarily serious. Yeah.
5 years ago, outside the Marriott Hotel, I'd been to see a Tony Bennett concert here, down by the, you know, the Summer Docks concerts they had.
Yeah,
I saw Tony Bennett Pops thing. Yeah. And I was sat in the front row that night, and Tony Bennett, who I love very, very much as well, and he spoke a bit Sinatra that night. And I found out, just by ways and means, that he was staying at the Marriott here. And I raced back to the Marriott, and I was very lucky to meet Tony Bennett that night, and I spoke to him about Sinatra. And it was the biggest buzz in my life because Sinatra and Tony Bennett were close friends, and Tony Bennett always talks. And in a very personal way, and I know it sounds a little bit maybe indulgent here, but whatever, I got off in Sinatra. Some people got off in Liverpool Football Club or Man United or other things. I got off in Sinatra. And to talk to Tony Bennett that night about the music and the essence of the man and what the man was and who he was and who he is and what he was... And, you know, we can knock Sinatra and blah, blah, blah. He was one of the first performers in America who stood up against racism in America and went down with Tony Bennett and with Brandon, people like that, and did the walks with Martin Luther King and all joking aside here. And I read...
He was no saint, though. I think that's the thing that makes the man as well.
Exactly. And he wasn't a saint. And I don't care what them... And sorry, Matt, I'm not being...
Yes, you're shouting.
You. But all I'm saying is...
He's telling you off.
I know.
What made for me Sinatra, the singer and the passion and everything, is what he was as a man and where he came from.
That's
his
what I was adding to.
And his birth in Hoboken when he was born in 1912, and it's his birthday next week. The guy came from... a lot of us came from here and people in Liverpool. And I'm not making a working class hero here, as I said earlier. The guy came from a very, very poverty-ridden background, and what he rose to, and what to me what he epitomised in his life, and who he was, and what he was, and as an artist, and as a singer, who won Oscars and made 60 odd films and run his own production company. That's all I'm saying.
It's interesting you mention the racism thing, because I think a lot of people forget that. And of course, you know, as part of the Rat Pack, he worked with Sammy Davis Jr. Yeah. And you can read countless stories of kind of like promoters saying, we don't want the black guy.
I mean, Sinatra was a young artist touring when he was with Jimmy James and people like that, and I'm forgetting here. But when Sinatra was a young artist touring, I mean, he had black musicians with him in the band, and they checked into hotels in the southern states in the USA, and they said, we don't have black people here. And Sinatra said, you don't take him, you don't take me. Yeah. You want me, you take him. And, you know, I think we tend to forget today just what the guy did and what he was.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was born in 1912. He was born in a different generation where we can look back now and criticise, maybe be a wee bit of critical of Sinatra's politics and who he was and what he was. But as Bobby Darin said, and people at Dean Martin have said, when you made a living working in clubs from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, right up to the 80s, that were run by guys that we call the mafia, in inverted commas, and they asked you backstage for a drink, and they came into your dressing room and knocked on your dressing room door and said, we want to come in here and have a drink, can we have your autograph, can we sign this and sign that? You ain't going to say no. Went, hey, I'll sign your autograph. Yeah. I'm a singer, you know. But I admire the man. He stood up. And he stood up to be counted for a lot of things that I believe in. And I regretted a little bit when he moved with Ronald Reagan, but American politics are different from maybe the way we view left and right. But there's many things when I was a young man growing up, when I read about Sinatra, I admired what he did and what he stood up for. And I'll stand up and support Sinatra on that all the
time. I think he touched a lot of people. We did something on this, on a different radio show, but on this radio station about the 10th anniversary of Sinatra's death. And we spoke to a guy who does a radio show in Palm Springs, and he spends 3 hours every Sunday afternoon just playing Sinatra. Yeah. And he said that, you know, it's one of these things. Of course, there have been performers, great performers around the world who sadly passed away. But Sinatra touched a lot of people, and still to this day in Palm Springs, on the anniversary of his death, you go along to where he's buried, and people actually go along, and they go along and they take bottles of Jack Daniels and just put it by the gravestone, bottles of Cinzano and stuff like that, a martini, because that's what he used to drink, cigarette packets, and leave some cigarettes there for Frank. Yeah. You know, it doesn't happen for many people, does it?
Duncan, without being overindulgent, and I'll shut up later... Can I just tell you the Jack Daniels story? Jack Daniels, as we all know, is a wonderful drink. And they have a tradition that...
Other wonderful drinks as well.
Of course there are. Yeah. But Jack Daniels, from what I read quite recently, have a tradition where if you're a reasonably famous person and you drink Jack Daniels, they've got land in Kentucky, acres and acres and acres of land in Kentucky, where they will give you a little plot, maybe 18-inch square plot.
Yeah.
If you were, say, Duncan or Jimmy McKenna who drank Jack Daniels, I'd get a square inch or square centimetre that they dedicate to that celebrity. A bit like, you know, in LA where put your handprints and your fingerprints, it's Clark Gable, if it's Cary Grant. And they have, where they give you maybe a 12-inch square plot in Kentucky, and they give you a name in that field, so-and-so drank Jack Daniels. Because of what Sinatra did for Jack Daniels, they gave the man a field of a whole acre, which is dedicated to Sinatra, because that was his drink.
It's just ridden with dandelions.
And he drank it neat, and he loved his JD.
Yeah.
And I
I mean, we know, you know, we talked about Sinatra and stuff, but you also mentioned that, you know, you're in this house with three other guys who are all younger and stuff, and you learn, I don't think you said you learn a lot of them, but you get fresh views about different things in life. What you guys must be into different kinds of music, so what are you into? And does Jimmy go, the Kaiser who? The Kaiser Chief? leaves? What are they? How does it work?
He kind of does. He's quite nice though, because me and Nick have got and John have got sort of similar taste in terms of. I think it depends on your mood, but I mean we like going out and clubbing, and you're like, you know, if you go up to a club and you like, you know, funky house music and things like that. But we are genuinely into sort of Stevie Wonder and that kind of ilk, which sort of
got the Motown stuff.
Yeah, which that Motown stuff sort of coincides with Sinatra and, you know, Aretha Franklin and things like that. So if we have a sort of a house party back at ours. Nine times out of ten, it'll be Stevie that's on, and we'll allow Jimmy a bit of Frank now and again. Yeah. Although, I mean, it's sort of, me and Nick have just got used to it.
Is it rationed?
Yeah,
at the end of the night,
you'll just hear some sobbing from his room at about 1 o'clock in the morning, and as the house party's going downstairs, you knock on Jimmy's door, and he's just in a quivering mess with his Sinatra CDs strewn around him. No, but I appreciate it. I didn't really know much about Sinatra.
I introduced Matt to Sinatra a couple of years ago, and Matt used to say, Jimmy, I hate it, and a couple of numbers I played...
I didn't say I hate it. I can appreciate a performer.
Exactly.
I can appreciate a performer. I don't idolise him like you do, but in the same breath, I can appreciate him for being what he is and the talent that he's got and an amazing voice. And you know, my musical taste is right across the board, but you know, we seem to find some sort of equilibrium.
What was the last CD you bought? I got told off for asking that question, because I used to ask a lot on Bloke Talk, and it turned out people didn't buy CDs.
Well,
they download
CDs
music.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. To be honest, I'd be fibbing if I said that I was really... my musical taste seems to just jump on the back of people rather than me actually going out and finding myself. I'll say, oh, that's good. Or I'll know lyrics to tunes that I don't know the actual song title to, or who actually made it, or it'll be the other way around.
Here's a question for both of you. What do you make of, I mean, you know, I'm sure Saturday night in the house you put the telly on occasionally and you might get your rocks off to Strictly Come Dancing.
or maybe the X Factor.
What do you make of the X Factor thing, both as kind of, you know, actors yourself and performers and stuff? Do you think, because it's an old chestnut of a debate, but I love kicking it around. I mean, do you think the X Factor is a good thing? There is something out there for people who might have a talent and it gives them an opportunity, a platform to be discovered, or actually is it car crash TV?
It's a tough one, and this year it's funny you ask this year, because it's obviously, as actors, reality TV is something that, you know, it's the sort of bane of your life to a certain extent. I mean, there's the age-old thing of it's taken our jobs, etc., etc., and this, that, and the other. But on the other hand, I must admit, me and a couple of pals, Guy, who used to play Craig, who plays Craig in Hollyoaks, and a couple of the lads, actually sort of stayed in and watched half of one of the X Factors before we went out the other day. And it's almost compelling viewing.
I must admit,
and it gets to the point where, you know, where do you draw the line in terms of people deserving a chance who've got genuine talent? And it does find people, but in the same breath, you also understand that as a person who's got half a brain, that it's sort of stitched up to a certain extent and people are being made a mockery of. And it's really tough to know sort of which way to put your foot, you know.
I've got a question for you. Would either of you actually do reality TV, like Go in the Jungle and I'm a Celebrity?
Oh, I would never say never, but I think I'd get close to as ever never say never when I say I would never, ever, ever, ever.
Ever. Never, ever.
No. Not only because I couldn't eat creepy crawlies. I don't blame anybody. If somebody wants to go on a show and do it, that's down to them, and I would never be judgmental. Get back to Duncan, your question on X Factor.
Yeah, yeah. What do you reckon?
My views have changed over the years. I there's a part of me thinks it's a bit exploitative in the sense that these young people are having the taken out of them in many ways, and but there's a lot of talent coming through. But in this day and age, if young people are looking for a way to get into what they want to do and what they love doing, and if that's the way they have to do it, then I support them and go ahead and do it. Mm. I would wish that they could get the financial rewards that go along with that. And I think in that sense, there's a wee bit of exploitation going on. Yeah. And I'm not knocking anybody here. I think I used to be a person that didn't have much time for Simon Cowell, but I think when his objective judgment, he talks about it, it's good and it's spot on. But I wish the kids that are getting in and making this show, a cheap show in terms of production, to make it every Saturday night. Yeah. The kids that are a part of it, I'd like to see them getting a little bit more financial rewards out of it.
Yeah, just to finish off, just to for my own sanity, I tried to rationalise it in my head last Saturday when I was thinking, it's 9:15, I haven't gone out yet, I was supposed to be out at 8:30 and I'm still watching it. I think the way I've determined it is, you've got X Factor and things like that where you do find genuine talent, and then you've got shows like Big Brother and I'm a Celebrity and everything else, which is just, as far as I'm concerned, absolute outrageous, terrible TV. Mm. Whereas at least on something like X Factor, you
there is a certain amount of...
It is about actually about talent.
Of course, yeah. I think that's the way I've sort of... Am I allowed to watch a little bit of X Factor?
That's how you justify, isn't it?
Justify, yeah, to a certain extent. Yeah.
Makes sense. All right, listen, we'll pause for a second because we need to. It is Bloke Talk and it's City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
This is a man's world!
Bloke Talk with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
But it would be nothing...
Bloke Talk here at City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. I'm Duncan. Laura's here, Jimmy's here, Matt's here as well. And thank you very much for downloading or tuning in. We just had a little bit of James Brown there. Either of you into your James Brown at all? Does he make it on into do people still have MIDI systems? I said the MIDI system in your house.
Yeah, definitely for me. Still rocks it.
Now, Jimmy, you're a political beast, aren't you? You're a political animal. Well, that's if we go on the fact of whether or not your Wikipedia entries is correct or not. But a keen supporter of the Labour Party, and you spoke at a number of rallies in 2005 general election.
I can't even go back before that. But I was asked by Phil Redmond, who was one of my old boss at Mersey Television as it was then, and I've known Phil for over 20 years. A guy that I've got a lot of affection for and a lot of admiration for, Phil. A Labour man. And he asked me if I would front a rally here in 2005 that Tony Blair was coming up to do St George's Hall. And I was very, very happy to do that, yeah.
What do you make of Blair?
And the pause isn't a pregnant pause because I'm thinking here. I think Tony Blair was the right man at the right time to bring Labour up to where we had to be. Like Obama's the right man for America at the moment. I think, you know, I don't think we can judge anybody supremely or definitively in any way, shape or form. He's a human being. He came in, he came from his background, he was a Labour man, he had to modernise it, we had to kind of get away from 18 or whatever, 19 years of Thatcherism, and he was a boy to do it. But I remember at that rally that we had that night, we went backstage and we had a wee drink and a wee chat, and I think we were about 2 or 3 years into the Iraqi war then, which I have to say, on the evidence we had then, frighteningly, I supported the Labour government to go into that war. Not wholeheartedly, but there was a part of me felt if this is what we're getting presented with, if there's a nuclear weapon that this country can produce that they're going to drop in Israel and Israel are going to bomb then and bomb Syria, we are in big trouble. Yeah. I think we went into war.
Someone needed to hold Bush's hand.
But I remember Tony Blair when he asked me about that night and he said to me, what did you think? Did you support me in the Iraqi war? I said, I did then, but I don't now. And I remember what he said to me. He said, when I was in opposition, I had the luxury of having a go at John Major and having a go at everybody. He says, but when I became the Prime Minister, the buck had to stop with me and I had to make decisions. When somebody comes into your room at 12 o'clock at night and says, Tony, we've got to send these kids in here at 6 o'clock in the morning and some of them are going to get killed and some innocent people are going to get killed in that country. And they ask you that question and you have to give an answer. I'm glad that I'm not the Prime Minister. Yeah. I'm glad I don't have to do it.
You know, it's an interesting one to talk about because I think a lot of people, you know, they look to the evidence that was presented in front of them and, you know, well, it's quite possible that Saddam Hussein has access to weapons of mass destruction.
They told us they did. I don't think they said it was quite possible. I think they told us they did. The CIA told us they did. Mossad told us they did.
The electorate was lied to because it turned out it wasn't the case. Yeah. And if it was the case, the weapons still haven't been found. Exactly. So he's done a very good job of hiding it.
Exactly.
Did you kind of feel... Did you feel let down? Did you feel you were lied to? Because I talk to people when I do the weekday show, and they go, "I'll never forgive this man. I was lied to. They lied to the people of this country." They're you know, feelings are high.
Then the question is, did he believe what he was being told? Hey, it's a question we're all going to live with.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right, you've hit the nail on the head. It's a decision none of us will want to have to make. No. You see, I think you make a good point, and I'm fascinated by this, and I've read a lot of books because I'm interested in it. You know, I've read Mandelson, Burke's, Alistair Campbell's biography and stuff like that, because there was definitely a makeover job that needed to be done for the Labour Party, you know, and you've got Mandelson, you've got Campbell, and you had Blair, and you had Brown to a certain extent, but the main architects, I believe, were Campbell and Mandelson. Yeah. You know, they changed. They created a brand in New Labour. Yeah. They made it a respectable and needs to happen. But again, I come across people probably on a weekly basis, and again, I'm talking about the show I do during the week when we talk about all sorts of stuff and politics always crops up, who'll go, you know, I've always been a Labour man, but you know what? New Labour, I gave them a couple of chances at the general election. I will not be voting Labour. They've lost their principles, their values, their beliefs and stuff. The sad thing is, there's nowhere for those people to go.
Yeah, but what are you going to get? I don't blame anybody. We said earlier, I celebrate people becoming millionaires and driving nice cars and celebrating the success of what they do. But I just believe that if there's a wee bit, share it around a little bit.
Can I just chip in with my own
political... Well, I was going to ask you, where do you come from on all
well,
this?
Well, I'm, you know, my sort of political knowledge has probably grown less, you know, obviously it gets better as you get older and living with the likes of Jimmy and people like that, you talk more, you read more, et cetera, et cetera. But I sort of view it as... in terms of people, exactly what we just said there, in terms of people who I look at and you may trust or you may, you know, wholeheartedly trust, but in terms of how you view someone, I thought Tony Blair sort of came across to me as a sort of a more genuine character than any of the others. In other words, you know, whether you've sort of agreed wholeheartedly whether he's right or wrong, and if I was to put him up against people like we just talked about there, Cameron, et cetera, et cetera, I know who I'd choose to, as a person, to have a chat with or to express my views to, and I'd sooner put him in charge over any of the others.
I mean, Blair's gone, as we know. What about Brown? What's your perception of Brown? Matt, what do you make of Brown before we get Jimmy's take on this?
In terms of, if they obviously got to draw the comparison to when Tony Blair was in government. I like Tony Blair better as a public speaker, as a person with charisma, who's a bit more charismatic, who came across as more of a people person. But obviously, you know, Gordon Brown has managed our money for the last 10 years and done a reasonable job on it as well. I'm still up in the air, to be honest, a little bit with Gordon Brown, but I'd still back him over the alternatives.
Yeah, what about you, Jimmy? What do you make of Brown?
Well, I'm a Brown man. Yeah. And I'll tell you where I've got to my point in life. I'm 55 now. I think you've got to be naive or stupid to think that politicians, I mean, you get to that level, President of the United States or a Putin or a Medvedev, whatever you call him, or a Gordon Brown, has to operate in a world that we operate in tonight. And I'm sure these men and women come into it like us. We'd like the best for everybody in the world and share the wealth equally among everybody in the world. But when you come across people like Mugabe, when you come across warlords in Afghanistan and people in Iraq and Iran and your Saddam Husseins and your people like this, how do you deal on a day-to-day level and how do you stick by your principles and your ideals that you want to make everybody and have an equal share with everybody? Yeah. I would love to go into a place in Afghanistan tonight and talk to your man that's running Al-Qaeda. What's his name? Not Saddam.
Bin Laden.
And sit down and say, listen, I respect you and I respect your views and I want very, very much to try and empathise with you and help in any way I can. And I would love to, but I don't think that you can sit down on a one-to-one basis with someone like that. Yeah. You could sit down with moderate people and say, I understand where you're coming from and living in Palestine, the terrible poverty those people live in. Yeah. And we've got to, I think if we can sort that one out between Israel and Palestine, we'll go a long way to sorting out what's going wrong in the world tonight. Yeah. And I think it's not to do with Israelis or Palestinians or Russians or Scots or English, it's people. And it's having an understanding and an empathy and a compassion for each other.
I think George Bush didn't do the world the greatest service in terms of any view on Western society, did he?
And to go back to my point, I don't think any leader in the world tonight, no matter what ideals they have or principles they have, can actually go into a situation to negotiate for the best for the country that you represent and come out of it with a full bag of goods. It's impossible. Yeah. We have to have some kind of a compromise and understanding and tolerance and respect for each other's lives and how we live and how we're going to live. And until we start to eradicate poverty and terrible diseases that we could eradicate. I remember hearing Bill Clinton, just after he'd been the president, give the Leith speech one night, and I watched it on a Sunday night in an omnibus in the BBC. And Clinton stood up without notes and gave a 45-minute speech and stood there that night at BBC Centre in London with all your Jeremy Paxmans there and your great journalists that I love and respect and admire and that audience. And that man stood up there and said, I was the leader of the most powerful country in the world. And I know that overnight we could have eradicated different things, diphtheria, all the TBs and this and that. He said we had the financial clout, but we didn't have the clout from the people that really mattered that behind that wealth to do it, because there are too many people holding on to too much money and frightened for their little corner in the world. I just say open up a little bit and chill and relax a little bit and share that wealth a little bit.
Good to talk about it. I want to end on a, well, I was going to say a lighter note, but I don't mean lighter, because we're in the final 5 minutes of Bloke Talk here at City Talk 105.9. I read something during the week about we're more angry than ever before in this country. Are you aware of that? They polled 20,000 people.
Doesn't surprise me.
And loads of stuff came out, including that people wouldn't think twice about slamming a door in someone else's face or abusing
horrible.
Someone in the street. So I just thought we'd find out. Well, I'm going to ask you both, what makes you angry, either of you? And also, just to give us a total balance on it as well, the one thing, you're not allowed to say Sinatra in answer to this question, that gives you the most joy. So, as I say, we're in the final 5 minutes. So, Matt, what? They're the one thing that just makes you so, beyond belief, angry.
Even more than road rage, which is right up there in my top three, is just basic manners. I mean, I've had arguments where I could be anywhere in a chip shop in a newsagent's... and someone just snatches the change of the person behind the counter and doesn't say thank you. It's just basic manners for me is something I was brought up on it was so in my face with mum and dad, and I'm so pleased for them for ramming it down my throat, and it's something I'll pass on to my kids one day. And it's just, I don't know, these days it just seems to be such commonplace, which is worrying that it's just...
It's become acceptable. That's the sad thing. People accept it. They don't challenge it.
Exactly, which is just... I can't abide by it. Yeah. That's the one thing I think...
What about you, Jimmy? You're a passionate man. What makes you angry? Angry!
I agree wholeheartedly with Matt, because I think from that comes everything else. It comes an understanding, a tolerance, an empathy, and out of good manners, a please, a thank you, and respect for another person, and I think that sums it up, Matt. I agree with you, son.
And joyous things, and you're not allowed to give Sinatra as well.
We just agreed there.
Wow, they agreed on something.
That's nice, isn't it?
Joyous in itself. What's the thing, you know, the simple pleasures in life, what are they?
I don't know, can we be as broad as having fun? Just
having a laugh.
But I think getting up every day and doing some of what you're doing, you've got to be thankful for, and enjoying what you're doing, getting up and knowing that you're going to enjoy your day.
Yeah.
I know it sounds a bit... I don't know if that is
exactly I think if you're content with life and you think, I've got my lot and I'm just going to make it work... And
I think pals...
That's one of the greatest gifts, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. You've got pals around you that you love and respect and you can share things with, you know.
A good family. And... do you know what gives me a great joy? Just seeing
Man United.
Man United,
That's my big.
And Fergie, do you know what? Before we could just go in, before we move on here, you're talking about Sinatra. The other man that I have a great passion for and think is amazing is Sir Alex Ferguson.
He's not an angry man.
That he can go to train. Can you imagine what that guy feels like? It's whatever Sir Alex is now, 66, nearly 67. He gets into training every morning and gets kids like Rooney and Ronaldo and young people like that reacting to his passion. And Benitez gets it, and Wenger, and great football managers that have young guys like Rooney and Van Persie coming in every day, and Stevie Gerrard, who I love as a football player, and Torres. Can you imagine what Benitez must feel every morning when he's in the training ground and he's watching these kids juggling the ball in the air and knocking it about? That, to me, is something I would have loved to have done. To be a manager,
there's
like
still
those guys.
Time.
There isn't.
You haven't seen Jimmy run.
Listen, James, that's about it. It's kind of flown by, and thank you both.
It's been great,
and thank you for coming in. And we shoot the breeze about various things, like music, politics, and you know, you're kind of like living together in your monkey style shared house and stuff.
I'd love to go to that house.
I think
the offer's there, Laura.
You know, get Jimmy around to clean your loo, and that'll make you a nice sandwich. Jobs are good. Jimmy, thank you. Thank you for coming in. And Matt,
thank you, Laura.
Thank you as
well. No problem. Thanks,
Laura, as ever. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
All the thank yous. Any more thank yous?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This has been Bloke Talk on City Talk 105.9, the Voice of Liverpool.
Listen, and log on to the Voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.